Okay, let's unpack this. We are diving into a toolkit today that, well, it seems to have really shifted how product engineers think about building software. And actually, before we really get started, we absolutely want to thank the supporter of this deep dive, SafeServer. SafeServer supports this exploration, handling the hosting side of things for software like this and really aiding in your digital transformation. You can find more info at www.safeserver.de. So our mission today is to explore posthog. The goal is, well, pretty simple. Explain what this heavily starred open source platform actually is, why it makes this bold claim of being an all-in-one solution, and importantly, how it simplifies life for product teams, especially, if you're maybe just starting out in the world of product analytics.
And you can tell it's gaining serious momentum. I mean, our sources today are straight from their main marketing pages, sure, but also their GitHub repo. And that shows, what, 29.8 thousand stars and 2,000 forks.
Wow.
Yeah, that kind of traction doesn't just happen by accident. It really signals they're solving a pretty crucial pain point for developers.
Absolutely. So the big picture, the core idea, is that Posthog aims to be the single source of truth for building successful products. It rolls together product analytics, session recording, feature flagging, A/B testing, all those separate tools that product engineers usually have to kind of cobble together.
Right. Into one open source bundle.
Exactly. Okay, so here's where it gets really interesting for me. Every tech stack eventually hits that problem of tool sprawl, right? One service for errors, another for feature flags, maybe a third for user analytics. Why did Posthog decide to consolidate everything? What's the philosophy behind that?
Well, what's fascinating here is it feels like a core philosophical shift. They actually define Posthog as a product OS, like an operating system, but for your product data.
A product OS. Okay.
Yeah, and they recognize that if you're a developer, pretty much every decision you make, should I fix this bug? Should we launch that feature? It all requires context. The key insight driving this whole thing seems to be that developers should operate from the full set of data, not just like a siloed slice of what's happening inside their app.
Right, we've all felt that pain of disconnected data silos. If I'm trying to debug something critical, I need the error log, sure, but I also need to see the user's click path and maybe know if they're a paying customer. It all matters.
Exactly.
So, what does this full set of data actually mean in Posthog's world? Technically speaking, I mean.
It means basically breaking down those walls between the different operational bits of the business and the product engineering side. So, for instance, Posthog is designed to integrate data that happens outside the application itself, but still really defines that customer experience.
Okay, like what?
Things like financial data, maybe payments tracked in Stripe. Or exceptions captured by a separate error tracking tool, or even support tickets logged in something like Zendesk or Salesforce.
Okay, wait a second. If I'm a developer, that sounds fantastic for making decisions, definitely. But I have to ask, isn't consolidating financial data, customer service history, and every single user click into one potentially open source platform? Isn't that a pretty significant security and maintenance challenge? That's a lot of critical data in one basket.
That's a really important question, yeah. And it speaks directly to their engineering approach, I think. Their argument seems to be that managing one highly secure integrated system is actually less risky, potentially, than constantly syncing sensitive data between, say, half a dozen separate vendors,
Oh, okay,
each
man.
with its own authentication, its own compliance quirks. By integrating these pipes, they have this data pipelines and warehouse component we can talk about. They create a kind of unified identity across the data,
I see.
which lets you do things like say, okay, show me all users who clicked feature X, had error Y last Tuesday, and submitted a high priority support ticket last week. That kind of visibility, well, it allows for much more informed decisions.
It sounds like the real value isn't just having the tools in one place, but it's that single, unfragmented view of the entire user journey from, payment to frustration to actually using a feature.
Precisely. It shifts the focus from just reporting abstract numbers to directly informing, actual product strategy changes.
So we get the philosophy. Single source of truth, unified view. Since it is an all-in-one platform, let's look at the toolkit itself. But maybe instead of just defining basic terms, because our listeners probably know what A/B testing is, let's focus on the synergy. How do these tools actually work together in this unified environment?
That's the critical difference, right?
Yeah.
Because in a traditional stack, you might run an A/B test in, say, tool A,
Yeah.
but then you've got to manually pipe those results over to tool B, your main analytics platform, just to see the full impact.
Yeah, that's always a pain.
Here, the idea is the tools share the same underlying event data immediately. So take product analytics combined with feature flags. Let's say you set up a feature flag. Maybe you're rolling out a new checkout button to just 10% of your users.
Yep.
Since the flag is native to the platform, that 10% cohort is just automatically tracked by the analytics engine. No extra setup. Mm-hmm. Then, maybe the next day, you decide, hey, let's turn this into a proper experiment, an A-B test.
Right.
You don't have to redefine the cohort. You don't have to re-instrument any code. The data is already flowing right into the experiments tool.
Mm-hmm.
That allows for immediate statistical analysis on, say, conversion rate changes.
Okay, that dramatically cuts down on the operational lag and the engineering overhead, I imagine. What about the tools focused more on, like, product stability? Errors and replays.
Yeah, look at session replays and error tracking. Session replays, for those who haven't used them, are like watching a screen recording of a real user session.
Right, super useful.
In the traditional model, if a user reports some weird issue, you might see the error log in tool A, but you have zero visual context. You're just guessing. With PostHog, the idea is if an error pops up in the error tracking section,
yeah,
the developer can immediately click and jump straight to the session replay that's tied to that exact moment the error occurred.
Oh, wow. Okay, so instead of trying to reproduce a bug based on just a stack trace, which can be impossible sometimes, I can actually watch the user encounter the bug live, see exactly what steps they took, maybe check the corresponding network logs right there alongside the replay. That sounds like, well, like a huge improvement in debugging time.
It absolutely can be.
Yeah.
And kind of feeding into all of this is the data warehouse pipeline's capability. This is sort of the heavy lifting engine behind the scenes. It's what ingests that external data we talked about, Stripe, HubSpot, whatever, and lets you run custom transformations on it.
Okay.
And critically, it then lets you send that enriched unified data stream out to, I think they say, 25 plus other downstream tools. So it ensures PostHog remains flexible, even if your stack evolves later.
That makes sense. Keeps it from being too much of a closed box. Finally, we should probably talk about LLM analytics. You know, AI-powered applications are becoming huge, but they bring this whole new layer of operational complexity. How does PostHog handle that?
This is where they really seem to be looking ahead. For applications using large language models, they're capturing specialized metrics that are pretty vital for operations. Things like API call traces, token generation counts, latency for the model responses, and even the actual cost per query.
Oh, interesting. Tracking the cost directly.
Yeah. It's an essential, quite specialized layer for measuring the efficiency and performance of these AI-driven products. And it connects that raw engineering cost directly to the user behavior metrics you're seeing in the main analytics dashboard.
Hmm.
It feels like a key feature that, frankly, a lot of other consolidated platforms are probably only just starting to think about.
Yeah, that definitely feels ahead of the curve. Okay, that is a seriously ambitious suite of tools all bundled together. It almost sounds like the kind of infrastructure only, you know, major enterprises could typically afford or manage. So what does this all mean for someone just wanting to get started? Is this actually accessible to small teams, or is there a steep barrier to entry?
This is where their open source roots and their pricing philosophy really come into play and make a difference. They basically offer two main paths. The recommended option is PostHog Cloud.
Right, the hosted version.
Exactly. It's engineered for speed, reliability, basically zero maintenance for you. And crucially, they offer an extremely generous free tier.
How generous are we talking here? Like for a startup or maybe just an individual developer exploring the platform?
We're talking generous to the point where they state that 98% of their customers currently use it entirely for free.
Wow, 98%.
Yep. Every month you get, 1 million events for product analytics, 5,000 session recordings, 1 million feature flag requests, 100,000 exceptions tracked for errors, and 1,500 survey responses, all free every month.
Okay, that is a huge operational allowance for a startup or a small team.
That's
pretty impressive. Pricing only kicks in after you hit those limits.
Correct. Usage-based after the free tier.
Got it. And what about the pure open source experience? You know, for teams who really insist on absolute data sovereignty and want to self-host everything?
That option is definitely there. The ability to deploy a kind of hobby instance with just a single line of code using Docker on Linux exists. However, and they're quite transparent about this too, the sources generally advise that this setup is really only recommended up to maybe about 100,000 events per month.
Ah, okay. So it has limitations at scale.
Yeah, if you scale beyond that, they strongly suggest migrating to their cloud infrastructure, simply because managing the underlying data warehouse ClickHouse, I believe for massive scale, is a really non-trivial engineering task. And, well, they handle that best.
Makes sense.
Now, let's talk about their culture for a second, because this is often overlooked, but I think it's pretty central to their whole appeal, especially to developers. They don't just open source their code.
Right.
They seem to open source their entire company.
Wait, what do you mean? Like their internal processes? What does that actually involve?
It's pretty extreme transparency. They open source their entire company handbook. It details their strategy, how they make decisions, their ways of working, internal processes, everything.
Seriously, their strategy docs are public.
Yeah. And look, it's probably not just a gimmick. It seems to build this profound trust with the developer community, who aren't just users, but often contributors too. Mm. It's like a powerful statement. Look, if we're this transparent about how we operate internally, you can probably trust us to handle your mission-critical data responsibly.
That's bold. And I guess that transparency extends directly to their pricing philosophy too, which sounds like a pretty sharp contrast to standard SaaS practices.
Absolutely. Their pricing is completely usage-based, like we said, and they have an explicit no sales call approach. You don't have to talk to anyone to get started or figure out costs.
Ah, nice.
You can calculate your exact cost based on totally transparent per unit pricing, like that 000005 per event number after the free tier limit. There are no hidden tiers, no complex enterprise negotiations just to figure out what you'll owe. They explicitly aim to be the cheapest option at scale, and this radically transparent model is kind of how they try to prove it.
Okay, that's refreshing. Finally, let's just circle back quickly to the future. Beyond the LLM analytics tool they already offer, what are their teams apparently focused on in terms of integrating AI within the platform itself?
Well, the roadmap seems to suggest they're shifting the goal beyond just measurement towards more active automation. They're apparently working on AI features to automate some of the more monotonous analysis tasks, maybe summarize complex user journey information automatically.
Okay.
And perhaps more ambitiously, integrating AI into the actual development workflow. Like having the platform eventually suggest or maybe even make code changes to fix bugs it identifies automatically.
Oh.
Yeah, definitely an evolution from just being a data collector to potentially being more like a product co-pilot.
That's quite a vision. So I guess the key takeaway here is that this isn't really just one tool or even just a collection of tools. It's more like a unified, very open, and incredibly transparent ecosystem designed to give product engineers that single source of truth, hopefully eliminating some of the guesswork and maybe even the security risks that come from having all these disparate data sources.
Indeed. And maybe for a final provocative thought, the sources mentioned there, their unique culture, including this one time they apparently sent customers a floppy disk that turned out to be a Rickroll.
Yeah, okay.
Which is fun, sure. Mm-hmm. But underlying that is that transparency we talked about, sharing their strategy, their sales manual, their inner workings. That's what feels really foundational. And the question for you, the listener, might be, if a company is that open about how they operate internally, how much does that influence your trust when you're deciding whether to build your own mission-critical product on their platform? That openness, maybe it isn't just a feature. Maybe it's a kind of security and confidence guarantee in itself.
That's a great question to leave you with. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into PostHoc. And once again, ein großes Dankeschön an SafeServer für die Unterstützung dieser Deep Dive, die dir bei der digitalen Transformation und dem Hosting von Software hilft. Weitere Informationen findest du unter www.safeserver.de. We'll see you next time.